Today on Shift, we're talking to Leyland Oberst, president and CEO of Innovative Fuel Systems. IFS has developed a fuel system that allows diesel engines to utilize alternative fuels, fuels like natural gas and hydrogen. Stay tuned to hear more about this innovative Alberta-grown technology.
So Leyland, why don't we start by having you describe what the technology you have, what that's all about?
Sure. So what our technology does is basically on heavy duty diesel trucks or tractors, we have an aftermarket technology kit where we can displace roughly 45 to 50%, let's say up to 50% of the diesel burn, and run it on natural gas at the same time as the diesel. Okay, so the beauty, that the two foremost benefits of that to our current commercial customers and future ones is, firstly, it's a cleaner, natural gas is a cleaner burning fuel. So it does reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And secondly, and quite frankly, probably more prominently when you actually talk to the companies, is it's a massive fuel savings, because natural gas is considerably cheaper than diesel. So they're able to actually, even with the cost of our kit, get payback anywhere between, 10 and 20, 24 months, depending how much liters they burn in a day. So it is an aftermarket kit. We're completely non-intrusive of the engine, which is really a critical component. If we were intrusive of the engine, we would have been finished probably 3 years ago. But we've been building this company, this technology, all along to scale. And if you're going to scale and have clients like KAG Canada, you can't impact their warranty, and you cannot be invasive of the engine. So it's, our technology is basically, we've got our own ECU, or electronics control unit, we put on board. We've got some injectors, some other components, and then obviously there's a diesel tank that gets replaced with either a CNG or LNG tank. And again, there's no weight difference either, which is really critical to the consumer, because payload, right, and revenue is everything to them. So that's basically it. And I guess two other components I'll mention, John, that are critical and enticing to our current clients and future clients is there's completely no loss of power. So there's a reason companies buy diesel trucks and will continue to buy diesel trucks. It's the power and what they can carry. And 63,000 kilograms is huge in Canada. Completely no loss of power. So it took us quite a while to get there on that. And the second important thing is, if for whatever reason the natural gas runs out, or for range, or just something's going on with the system, it actually dynamically, automatically reverts to diesel, and the truck keeps running. And why that's important is there are some dedicated full natural gas trucks out there. When they shut down, run out of range, or something happens, they literally are on the side of the road.
Right.
Our diesel trucks keep moving, and that's very enticing to companies we talk to.
So, no, Leyland, where did the idea for Innovative Fuel Systems come from?
Well, so there was a company that had technology similar to this. Okay, about 5 years ago, they had this dual fuel. So, just let me back up a bit. Dual fuel, natural gas, diesel, dual fuel, if you will. Is not new. This has been around actually probably for 20, 25 years, okay? There's been a few companies that have taken a run at this, particularly in Canada that I know of. We've done some research throughout the world, but it's not new, firstly, Katie. So let's full stop there. But what I will say is most of them have only been able to work on sort of older trucks. And when the EPA standards came in 2014 and then and much stringer in 2017, these companies basically fell by the wayside, because all the new emissions requirements to be able to actually have the dual fuel system like ours, dynamically, non-intrusive, match it, no engine fault engine codes, it's really difficult, okay? So basically, that's the idea is not new, Katie, to answer your question. there was a company that had the technology that I bought out about almost five years ago, and it only worked on older trucks. But as I said earlier, we were building this. I wanted to build this to scale. I love the macroeconomics always, because I thought I knew where the world was going around emissions reduction. You got to remember, 5 years ago, we were 2 years into the Alberta downturn, and trucking companies were getting ground on their margins. There were only two areas they cut their G&A, cut a bunch of other spend. There were two areas they could drill down on: labor and fuel. And as you know, with the truck driver shortage, labor, and that's been going on for a while, labor they couldn't cut because their wages are going up. So it was fuel. So I knew it was an exciting market. The technology didn't work on new trucks, and I basically hired a bunch of engineers, and we went at it and got it to the point where we are today.
Well, you know what's cool is we hear this quite often from entrepreneurs is, you know, you've identified that market need, in this case, fuel. You need to think differently about fuel, and you jumped on that. I'm curious, as you were moving through this, what your journey as an entrepreneur has been like. How long have you been doing it? Give us a bit of background.
Yeah, so I founded the company in March of 2017. So yeah, we're actually up into our fifth year anniversary right away here. Just a bit of background on myself, I actually had a long, rewarding career at a firm called Deloitte, and was a partner there for actually 15 years, managing partner in Edmonton for the last five. So a lot of people say, my goodness, like you go from a corporate, you know, cushy role, as they would say, into something like this. But I was always an entrepreneur at heart, just to be clear. And I always knew I would do something before I was in the proverbial walking chair. So I'd been looking at a few opportunities. And again, to my point earlier, I was really excited about the macroeconomics around this, because I kind of had a vision of where the world was going on greenhouse gas emissions, notwithstanding who's in, you know, current political power. And again, I knew pain points for any customers or clients I ever had Deloitte was margins. So, you know, people can talk about how hot ESG is, and ESG is important. But if you actually tell shareholders, okay, you want to tick that box off, but you're going to lose money, it's not going to fly. So I felt that this technology, as we develop it, really, really covered two stay awake issues for customers. So back to my journey, John. Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, if you think about what I look at, what I enjoy, what my strengths are, is more around building teams and selling, if you will. Sometimes there's a stigma to that, but I actually enjoy it. But my first 3 years was not doing really any of that at all. It was building a team and building the technology. So some people have asked me, well, how are we able to obtain investment and keep this going and keep everybody excited? And I said, well, it's basically, I think, when I'm being told this by whether it's IRAP, Alberta Innovates, my investors, is, you know, our 3-5-7 year plans are pretty good. The problem is when you're in the R&D stage, it's the 3-5-7 day plans that are the problem. So when you talk about a journey, it's, you know, you, this is good. I get it. Investors get it. Potential bankers get it. Customers get it. Government agencies get it. But oh my God, we just have to step back here for a month and a half. So that journey was interesting. But I always felt that the market was just waiting for us. So that sort of allowed me to sleep at night, if you will. And then a bit of a nuance for my journey is we were basically had our first. We finished our first demonstration of our prototype in February, March of 2020.
Oh, and we know what happened then.
We know what happened then. And actually, in fact, we had two new engineers landed on our doorstep the Monday that Trudeau shut the country down. And they moved from Windsor and Mississauga, Ontario, with their families. So yeah, so there was, and we were looking at some big angel investors coming in at that time. So the first few months into COVID were interesting to say the least. But then a bit of serendipity in that May, June-ish, COVID was still up and down, but the world kind of got really hot and heavy around ESG. yeah, so that was a bit of luck for us on that one. And that was able for, and actually we were able to tap into a few COVID relief funds for tech companies. And then some investors that had been talked to started to get excited again because, you know, the individual said, you got to get some ESG in your portfolio. IFS is a local company. So there was a lot of pain for a few months there, and then things started to really improve. Now, COVID still is completely painful and part of the journey because supply chain issues around new trucks, instead of coming 3 to 6 months, they're coming 18 to 24. So companies we're talking to that want to put our technology on, they're saying we want to put out new trucks for obvious payback reasons. So that's getting delayed. So COVID's still there, but you know what? It is what it is. I tell my guys, we can only control what we can control. And, yeah, so John, anyway, it's been a fun 5 years, certainly different from the career I came from. But I, to be honest, in a weird work way, I'm sort of enjoying it. And I should be enjoying it more now because we should be able to be signing customers up left, right, and center. But we've got to fight through a few macroeconomic issues in the world that I think we'll get through.
Totally. It sounds like you have, you know, your head on your shoulders, Leland, and you're taking this all in stride, which is great. I've heard you refer to Innovative Fuel Systems as a bridge technology. What do you mean by that? What is that?
So what I mean by that, well, I mean, that's a politically correct statement. But what I mean by that is, I don't know what 2050 or 60 or 70 is going to look like, okay? But I think I pretty well know it's not going to look like it is today. What I do know is in the next 20, 30 years, and again, this is talking to industry, huge trucking companies in North America, diesel, just to be clear, diesel trucks are still going to be built. Okay. You can read in the paper or certain politicians or certain individuals will say there'll be electric trucks. There will not be electric heavy duty trucks carrying 63,000 kilograms of cargo in the next 23. I'm telling you, it's not happening. I'm answering your question, Katie. So with that, our technology again is being able to aftermarket on those trucks. Now, there may be a time, I don't think in my lifetime, but maybe my kids, where we get into, you know, fuel cell trucks, perhaps. I can't see it in my lifetime.
Sorry, I just want to interject. Is that because the diesel trucks just have vastly more power than an electric truck could possibly have?
Absolutely, John. And okay. And there's basically not there's studies around it, which I don't think anybody wants to hear on this interview, but there's been many studies around. There's just not a lot of electricity on the grid to fuel all these trucks, especially up in the north. I'm not sure it'll ever happen. And then, you know, there's talks about full hydrogen, this and that, hydrogen trucks, I'm sure we'll get into. So, Katie, so the way I look at it, I actually believe in my lifetime, we're not a bridge technology. But I think in over the course of 50 to 100 or more years, it's a bridge technology, if you will.
So taking us from one thing to another,
yeah,
it's acting as a, got it.
And what's the, from your perspective, what's the other? Is it hydrogen? Because that seems to be where a lot of the globe is going.
Yeah, it is. And I think there's a lot of infrastructure to be built. And remember, I talked about cost. It's expensive. So there's a lot of things to be figured out there. I can't really actually answer that. If companies still want to carry that heavy freight, I still cannot see, again, in my lifetime, there not being diesel trucks built. I can't. I think there may be a component of hydrogen trucks, maybe. I think I need to see more data and more planning around that.
I mean, you raise a really interesting point though, Leland, and this is something that we've talked about on the podcast before, is while this technology is wonderful to do, but it's not always viable in the market. Right. Yeah. And so in the work to reduce our GHGs, which is very important, we can all agree on that. We also have to figure out a way that is actually possible for our day-to-day lives. Right. Yeah. And you're saying that, you know, reducing GHGs is great, but it's just maybe not entirely 100% possible with this heavy trucking industry.
Well, it's not to zero. And you touch on something really interesting, Katie, because even, and again, I'm not trying to dismiss hydrogen, because in fact, we're actually on a couple of symposiums and our technology, we're actually currently developing it where we can have a dual fuel hydrogen diesel product. And we're not that far away from it, just to be clear. Now, I don't know where it's going to get fueled up, but that's not, again, like that's not our core competency. But what I will say is there is very few, if any, technologies that are truly net zero that are even being talked about. Like there's, if you look at well to wheel and if you look at the life cycle, there's even batteries, you know, the emissions that are emitted to make batteries. So, so the way I look at it, if you think about it, in the last 6 years, it's kind of, I don't think a lot of people know this, but since the current federal government, I guess, took over in October of 2015, they've obviously been very prominent around this issue, as they should, which is great. But GHG gas emissions have gone up in Canada every single month since then.
Why?
You tell me. Where I'm going with it is, we can talk all we want about being net zero in 2050 or whatever that year is, but that's not how the world works. That's not how anything works. You can't just keep going up, 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 and then just fall off a cliff. And it doesn't work that way. So I think bridge technologies or having any type of technology where you're actually starting to reduce and mitigate some of the problem, I think is very important. And I do believe that's where technology will really start to stick and have traction, is that here's something, and by the way, an industry that contributes 6.8% of GHG gas emissions in the world, in Canada. I think Canada's 6.6 in the world, 6.8. That's a big number.
That's the trucking industry.
In the trucking industry alone, yeah. Okay. Yep. So here's where you can start reducing it. Is it getting it to zero? No, but it's reducing it by, 10, 15%. And each truck, like I said earlier, we've got math behind it, is the equivalent of so many cars on the road. I think it's important to look at technologies that are ready to go now, as opposed to ones that are going to take 10, 15 years. And when somebody says something will be ready in 10 or 15 years, I can tell you that means 20 or 25. I know what our own journey here. Mm-hmm. Let's start now. Because otherwise, we're just going to throw money as taxpayers and or investors at technologies that sound great and look great, but they may never come to fruition, and they'll likely take decades.
So if you were to give or to have a magic wand and ask, the government, ask investors for anything to help you along this journey and to help us reduce GHG emissions, what would you ask them for? What would you get out of your magic wand?
To ask sort of the government or
how can you get your bridge technology, what do you need to get your bridge technology, in the market more so that we can help reduce these GHGs?
Yeah, no, that's something that I wake up and thinking about every day and are in discussions with a few folks. I'll be honest with you. So I always, my career has always been well served in listening to the customer. It doesn't matter what you think internally or talk about internally, or talk about even with government agencies. It's what does the customer care about, okay? And I can tell you that they are frustrated right now because they're reading in the paper and they're being told, get off diesel, get off this, and nobody's helping them at all. This is just from industry. So whether it's even, some subsidies on our technology or even 0%, which isn't a stretch because what is interest rates now anyway, 0.3, 0% loans for our technology or some sort of olive branch to say, we will help you or we will support you to get you off diesel. There's really been none of that, Katie, and we're sort of working behind the scenes to push that. But again, I'm trying to run a business. So you asked me a question, if I Christmas just finished, but if you asked me what would the Christmas gift to IFS would be, it would be for, whether it's the federal provincial government to give some subsidies to trucking companies for our equipment. Because they're looking for, see, that's another thing too. It's not that they think ours is too expensive. Our technology is, I told you, the payback's quite sweet anyway, but they're running a business. They keep thinking, okay, if the government's talking about this and telling us to do this, there's got to be something there to help us. I'm just telling you what they're telling me. So they're actually, some of the companies are waiting, going, well, I'm just going to wait 6 months. I think something's coming. And it's frustrating for us. But in fairness to them, If the feds announced a few months ago there's $17 billion, and yeah, maybe hydrogen's cleaner than natural gas, but we have a product that's ready to go. Can't you throw a few dollars into the kitty to give some incentives to the companies to do that? That would be my ask, Katie.
Well, it's interesting when you think, you know, with the talk of, you know, emissions reduction and high efficiency from a householder's perspective, high efficiency furnaces, boilers and stuff, there's certainly opportunities for a homeowner to access that stuff at a low cost or with a rebate. So what you're talking about is just more on an industrial level, and it seems to make sense, you know?
Yeah, no, John, in fact, it's funny you bring that up. I was talking to one of the companies the other day that we've got our trials with. He said the same thing. He goes, I'm getting it at home, or it's going to come. Like, why is it not coming to us as a company?
Right. Yeah.
And now, it's spot on.
Now this summer, you signed up your first commercial client, I believe. Is that correct? With KAG Canada?
Yep. Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that. They had the technology or your kit put on to six of their trucks.
That's right. Yeah.
And so where's that at now? How are things turning out for them?
Yeah, we actually put on the first truck in March of last year, and then back to supply chain COVID. The other ones were supposed to go on the same time, but they didn't get on till around May because they were 6 month delayed coming in, because those are put on new trucks. The first one was on a 2019. Anyway, they've been, you know, a few hiccups at the beginning, more around, quite frankly, it's something new for the drivers for KAG Canada. And for the listeners that don't know, it's formerly WestCan. So I think they're still branded a bit as WestCan, but moving towards KAG Canada.
Okay.
But once we got through that, you know, to be honest, like a few things here and there, but it's more around how to fill up and how a few little things that weren't catastrophic by any stretch, going really well. And in fact, this last cold snap, like we knew the way the technology was built, John, that actually in the anything, remember I talked about earlier, up to 50% displacement of the diesel. When the weather's colder than 8 degrees, the displacement's actually better. So 2/3 of the year in Edmonton, unfortunately, it's colder than +8. Sorry. I'm fortunate to actually hear that in person. But on average, that's, you know, it's 45 to 50%. But they were concerned that they wanted to see it go through a full sort of cold snap and see how the trucks operate. And we got through, as you guys know, the coldest snap since 1965. And yeah, they've been running great. They're really happy with them.
Right on. So hey, they got what they wanted.
Yeah. What's next for you guys in the next year or two?
So a couple things. We signed a deal with Jackknife Oilfield Services in November. They're an indigenous owned oilfield services company. So we've got to put our technology on 50 of their trucks, which was really exciting. Cause that was our first. Yeah. So it was really exciting. So we're focusing on that sort of Q2 of this year, over the next year to put those on. And then we're about to announce, we already have the purchase order, a deal with another company that actually to put on 10 trucks, but get this, 4 in Texas. So I've wanted to get into the U.S. after a couple of years. So we're going in a little early, Katie, but the sooner getting down there, the better. And I know the Export Canada is excited about that. We've been talking to them. So basically, I would say, yeah, notwithstanding these macroeconomic issues on supply chain issue, truck driver shortages, blah, blah, we hopefully would have had more signed up now, but we're looking to sign up basically deals. Like we're commercially ready. We want to sign more contracts. We want to get our technology out there. We want to get time on those trucks. And I think I've said all along that I'm not even sure we need a lot of business development managers, because once our technology gets out there, it's going to be word of mouth. And that industry is pretty, they all talk amongst each other. So I think that's definitely a focus of the company, going from commercializing to production. Now, you know, I was talking to my father the other day, and he said, well, that's exciting. Now it's Easy Street. But as you guys probably know, you should read the book, Why Do Startups Fail? That's actually now the tough part. Be careful what you wish for. But I think we're poised to hit that quite well. I also mentioned how we're designing our system to work with hydrogen as well. So I think we've got a separate team working on that as well. We've already got the plan. We know it's we're convinced it's going to work because it's basically just piggybacking off our current system. It's just a different fuel. So I think we're going to work on that to just see where the market goes if the infrastructure gets built. And then I guess there's always the capital side of things, right? Like where is this going to go with my investors? Are we going to go bigger private equity? Are we going to do an initial public offering this year? Lots of options. That's my sort of evening job.
So who do you work with? And this is, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, we interview a lot of different startups and stuff like that. And I'm intrigued by the complexity when you get to this point of looking for, you know, do we go public? Do we do these raises? And I get a little lost with that. It sounds very challenging. Do you have a group of people with you, consultants, friends, family that you're talking with about potentially going this way or that way? How do you navigate through all of that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, John. I wish I had. The answer might change by the hour. But generally speaking, you know, when you're in the early stages of the company, you basically, you know, you sort of work your contacts of high net worth individuals, okay, and see their appetite and what they're interested in your company, especially when it's a technology company. So that generally speaking gets you through sort of the early times. And then when you get to the commercialization stage, like us, you sort of look for what's called a Series A raise, you know, which is, you know, sort of almost, you know, usually a minimum $5 million. And that's sort of where you're looking at the, you know, whether it's venture capital funding or any sort of private equity funding, major family offices. And then, you know, sort of the stage after that could be a Series B, or you look at the public markets. But again, that can come with some trepidation as well, because you're publicly traded. It can be really good, could be really bad, depending on your news releases. But you're right, John. I think that is definitely always a stay awake issue for the founder and mm-hmm. and entrepreneurs, because unfortunately there are, or fortunately, there are a lot of options. But I can tell you, at some point you got to focus in and zone in, because for somebody to cut a real big check is, no matter how wealthy they are, it's a big decision. So basically, you know, in our, you know, currently that's the one thing about a company on the, when you're starting commercialization, you don't have a complete team of, like, I don't have an investment team to work through it. It's basically myself, my COO, you know, I've got a couple people I lean on, you know, shareholders I lean on. So I've got a really good network to help me through it. And sometimes I wonder, some entrepreneurs don't have that. And you actually, I'll be honest with you, you see companies fail, and they shouldn't fail. And it's because of the capital issue. They actually ignore it, and they just think the technology and running a company properly will win the day, and it should win the day, guys. Mm-hmm. But if you run out of capital, it does not. So
that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we talked a little bit about where the company's going in terms of the technology and the commercialization. What about growth? Team member wise. You're based here in Edmonton. How many are on the team now? What do you foresee what do you project in the next year, couple of years for growth?
Yeah, and that actually ties into the capital raise as well. So we're currently, our complement is, we've got 13 people. And actually we grew from 7 to 13 during COVID. So we're pretty proud of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. So we're almost 100% growth. Our projections, again, touch wood, assuming we raise this next round of capital, we likely will enter the US, we likely will be around 44 staff in 24 to 30 months.
Wow, yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah, now, would that all be local, or are you?
I would say 3/4 of that would be local. A quarter of it would be in the US. Yeah.
So I know we're jumping around a little bit here, but I do want to just take a step back and talk about the hydrogen industry in Alberta, just because it is such a hot topic. I think there's like 4 hydrogen conferences happening this spring. Like, mm-hmm. it's all anyone can talk about. So Leland, from your perspective, what is Alberta's advantage in the hydrogen space, and where do you see IFS fitting in?
So the advantage in the hydrogen space is just because we're Alberta. I mean, if you think we've got probably the highest skilled complement of engineers and technical staff in the world, quite frankly. I mean, I'm a bit biased, but that's, I think you can audit that and be pretty clear in saying that. And a lot of those skills that were learned in the patch can be transferable into the hydrogen economy. So I think that's the biggest thing that Alberta has. And to your point around the conferences, there really is a groundswell of top thinkers on this right now. And sometimes that takes a long time to get that organized, and that's already sequestered. So I think we can tap into that as well. So I think those are the two biggest advantages. How IFS can play into that, I think I've already spoke to that. Actually, we, even though, you know, industry's telling us, God, it's too expensive, where's the infrastructure? But we also know that if there's, to your point, Kate, if there's four conferences and this think tank and that think tank and these guys just raised $30 million on a prayer and this, that, like, we know there's something there. So we got to get ready for it. So that's why, again, we've hired a couple of engineers. We actually got government support for one of them, which was great, to actually focus on leveraging the technology we have now, the natural gas diesel dual fuel, to have a hydrogen diesel dual fuel product as well. So we will be ready to capitalize when and if the infrastructure is built and the cost starts coming down. You know, we always struggle saying we don't want to cannibalize what we have now, but right, we've concluded it's pretty succinct. We've got this product that's going to save you a lot in fuel and reduce GHG. And if we've got some companies that are interested in something more expensive that's even cleaner, and maybe they get some help, or whether it's the government or their shareholders have deeper pockets, we'll be ready to go with that. So I maybe a bit of cannibalizing, but the trucking market is so massive. We're not looking to do millions of units here. We're just looking to do thousands.
only thousands.
Right.
Only thousands, yeah. Only thousands.
And that, you know, like you said, it's not going away. The trucking industry is, it's here to stay. It's, you know, shipping and the logistics and all that. It's, it could change in a couple of 100 years, but right now,
the trucking industry, particularly the ones with food and grocery, they were killing it during COVID. And the one thing I would say on natural gas, I mean, there's so much of it, you know, underneath our feet here in Alberta and Canada.
Right.
There's got to be, we have to leverage it.
Right. Yes. It's a fascinating topic, and Katie, I'm going to insert the or cue you to insert the Inventures plug.
Oh, I was waiting for that. Good one, John. So for our listeners, Inventures, it's happening live in Calgary on June 1st to 3rd, and we will have some panels talking about hydrogen and clean technology and what the future looks like. So visit InventuresCanada.com for more information on that. And Leyland, we hope to see you there. Thanks for tuning in. For more Shift content, visit shift.albertainnovates.ca.